Long Island community leaders shared their vision for the future of the Long Island Power Authority at a public hearing yesterday. A commission has been tasked with transforming LIPA into a fully public system following failures by PSEG during Tropical Storm Isaias. Ryan Madden, a sustainability organizer with the Long Island Progressive Coalition, wants Long Islanders to have a power company that works for them.
Privatization failed us, PSEG is failing us, and now is the time for the public to lead us in a new direction. Across the country and here in New York, public power is cheaper, more reliable, and better able to transition to renewables. Coupled with democratic reforms, more equitable rate structures, and community oversight of the utility, LIPA can become a model for the nation.
The Reimagine LIPA campaign consists of more than 40 community, environmental, faith, civil rights, social justice, and indigenous groups. Hi, you're listening to After All Things, WSHU's daily news update from the Connecticut-New York region. New England states are getting a big chunk of funds from the federal infrastructure bill. A memo says Suffolk's cybersecurity response from over the summer suffered from a conflict of interest. And a holiday classic comes to life on Long Island. Those stories and more are coming up. I'm Sabrina Garon. New England states, including Connecticut, are receiving more than the national average from the bipartisan federal infrastructure bill. The Boston Federal Reserve says the $13 billion in federal funding would help make up for a tradition of below-average spending on infrastructure in the region. WSHU's Ebong Udama reports.
Riley Sullivan is the author of the Boston Federal Reserve Report. He says roads, bridges, wastewater, and drinking water systems in New England have been in need of repair for decades.
On average, we do spend less on infrastructure, and that trend has continued, is what this report is a bit of an update on that.
Sullivan says that's why the federal infrastructure money is much needed, especially in Connecticut.
Connecticut is getting slightly above the New England per capita appropriation. They're getting around $1,675 per resident, whereas the national average is $1,287.
Much of the new funding has been allocated to state and local governments over the next 5 years. Some of the projects would require local matching funds. Ebong Udama, WSHU News.
A memo obtained by Newsday offers the most in-depth look yet at Suffolk County's troubled run-up to the September hack that's impacted many local government functions. WSHU's Charles Lane has more.
The memo says Suffolk's cybersecurity response suffered from a conflict of interest because there wasn't an accountable security employee in charge to handle such an attack. The memo was written in early October by the software company CGI. It also says that it's not clear if the hackers have been completely removed from Suffolk's system. County officials said that the memo was limited to the restoration of the financial management system in the office of Suffolk Comptroller John Kennedy. Kennedy says that he wants to get the comptroller's financial management system off Suffolk's servers and shift them to the cloud, which he says is more secure. Kennedy says the hack was partly to blame for a delay in paying some $200 million in property tax refunds for those who successfully appealed their tax bill. Suffolk lawmakers are considering a bill that would allow the comptroller to migrate to a cloud-based system. Charles Lane, WSHU News.
A Christmas Carol has been a holiday favorite for years, and while there have been many adaptations of the story, a performance coming to Long Island will share it in the way the author intended. That's after headlines and a message from our supporter.
Support for After All Things comes from Hartford HealthCare. More COVID vaccine answers at hartfordhealthcare.org/vaccine or 833-621-0600.
K-12 Connecticut lawmakers voted to revamp the distribution formula for the $30 million Connecticut premium pay program for private sector workers. This is due to a greater than expected demand for aid from thousands of frontline workers who remained on the job during the COVID-19 pandemic. Another proposal also would earmark an additional $76 million for the pandemic hero pay program. The move comes after officials predicted planned bonuses of up to $1,000 for eligible workers would end up being only $233, given the large number of applicants. Nassau County Executive Bruce Blakeman has received an almost 8% pay increase since taking office despite pushback from lawmakers. Blakeman's salary jumped from close to $200,000 to $212,000 since January following his election in 2021. This is the first time the county executive's base pay exceeded $200,000. Blakeman says he will not be accepting another pay raise in 2023. His salary will remain close to $220,000. This is on par with Suffolk County Executive Steve Ballone's salary after a decade in office. Connecticut has extended its free bus fare service through March 31st. Several city leaders want this to be made permanent, including New Haven Mayor Justin Elliker, who says the program reduces vehicular traffic and carbon emissions. In New Haven, more than 30% of residents don't own a car, so public transportation is a must for them to get to work. Free bus fare costs the state almost $3 million a month, while the gas tax holiday costs the state up to $25,000 a month. On December 19, 1843, a new novella was published in London, and by Christmas Eve, all copies of the books were sold out. The official title is A Christmas Carol in Prose, being a ghost story of Christmas. There have been tons of adaptations of the story over the years, and sometimes a performance comes along that gives the audience a glimpse into how author Charles Dickens originally presented it by telling it himself. WSHU's Tom Cuser spoke with Gerald Dickens, who will be bringing the holiday classic to Long Island.
The voice of Dickens reaches us today through his great-great-grandson, actor, director, producer, and author Gerald Dickens. He'll perform his one-man adaptation of the famous work at the Cinema Arts Center in Huntington on Long Island on December 5th. And Gerald Dickens joins me now by phone from London. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to speak with you.
What inspired you to develop your own adaptation of A Christmas Carol?
I'm ashamed to say it wasn't actually my idea in the first place. It was back in 1993, which was the 150th anniversary of the first publication of A Christmas Carol. And somebody came to me with the idea of staging a charitable event. There was a lot of publicity about A Christmas Carol in Britain during that year. I was an actor. Dickens went on tour and performed A Christmas Carol himself. So it did seem like a really good idea to her to mix all these things up together and create a version of what Dickens' show might have been like. And I took as my basis Dickens' own script, the one that he had adapted for his reading tour. That seemed like a pretty good place to start. Mm. Setting aside the fact that I was related to him, just as an actor, having those words and the atmosphere that he created and the rapid change of location and everything else that makes A Christmas Carol such a joy, it was just incredible to work on. And that's when I got absolutely hooked by this story, which I've now been living with for 29 years, almost 30 years. But that's how it all began.
It must have been very challenging to adapt a work that flows that way, and such a famous work, too.
Well, of course, from a performance point of view, you have the advantage of that pretty well all of the audience know where the story is going.
Mm.
So you haven't really got to worry too much if they fully understand that we're in the past and then we're in the present and then this is a vision of the future, because everybody knows that. When I first came to start adapting it, I went to my father for advice because he was a huge Dickens fan and scholar and expert. And I said to him, you know, how do I tell this story? How do you do this? Because it's going to be, you know, maybe 90 minutes of me just standing there with a book. How do you maintain the concentration of an audience for that length of time? And he said to me, don't worry, Dickens has done all the work for you. And I didn't know what he meant. I thought that's not very helpful. I wanted something more tangible than that. So I went back to the original text of the book and started reading it out aloud. And I got to the first line that describes Ebenezer Scrooge. And the line is, he was a squeezing, wrenching, grasping, scraping, clutching, covetous old sinner. He was hard and sharp as flint, secret, self-contained, solitary. And by the end of reading that sentence, I had just turned into him without doing anything. So my father was absolutely right. Dickens had done all the work. It's all there in the text. It's not a book, it's a script, complete with stage directions and everything. It's wonderful.
And when you tell the story, I understand you're dressed in the clothing of the time that the novella is set in. And sounds like what you're describing is you're telling the story as if you were Charles Dickens. Is that right?
Well, sort of, I suppose so. I mean, I don't go out of my way to be Charles Dickens. I'm very much me. You're right, the costume, it's a single costume throughout the whole show. I don't change costume at all, just to give that feeling and that atmosphere. But what I really wanted to do in this adaptation was to narrate the story, so using a lot of the narrative text, which, of course, when you're watching a movie or a TV special, is lost. You don't get that. You might see it in the way it's filmed, but all you get is the dialogue, whereas I am telling the story in the words that Charles Dickens used. So from that point of view, yes, it is Dickens telling his own story.
How many characters, then, do you have to sort of inhabit during this this adaptation?
That's a very good question. It's somewhere around 30, between 25 and 30.
Wow.
And the reason I hesitate is some of them don't have voices. So you have to decide, do they count as being characters in the show or not? But including Scrooge's dressing gown, which is hanging up on the back of the door and which terrifies him after he's seen the face of Jacob Marley. And I just sort of do a moment where I'm dangling like a dressing gown on a hook. So I think that counts as a character, even if it doesn't say anything. So it's around, I'd say, between 25 and 30.
Is there any part of the play that resonates with you more than others?
Do you know, it changes. An awful lot depends on how I'm feeling, how a specific audience is, maybe a venue. You know, some audiences embrace the laughter and the joyfulness of the story and the playfulness. Others react to the drama and the intensity, and you sort of get swept along with that. There's an amazing moment in the play, which I often cite as my favorite point, is when we're with the ghost of Christmas yet to come, and he leads Scrooge to the Cratchit household, and we're witnessing the family in mourning following the loss of Tiny Tim. And I just stand at the very edge of the stage, pointing out into the auditorium, and I say, it was quiet. It was very quiet. And if everything has gone well, if the show is really doing what it should do, that moment you can absolutely cut the atmosphere. You can feel the audience's attention and fear and everything else. It's a very still moment. And I love that moment if everything's going well.
That was actor and producer Gerald Dickens. You can see his one-man adaptation of A Christmas Carol at the Cinema Arts Center in Huntington on Long Island on December 5th. You can get more information on our website, wshu.org. For the latest news from Long Island and Connecticut, you can listen on the radio or anytime online at WSHU.org, and it's even easier to take us with you on the go with the WSHU app. After All Things is supported by Hartford HealthCare, and just like everything else you hear on WSHU, this podcast is made possible with the generous support from listeners like you. So thank you. I'm Sabrina Garone. Talk to you tomorrow.